Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Josh Sahanta is a Canadian Juno-nominated indie pop singer-songwriter. His songwriting is packed with deeply rich narratives and cool contemporary soundscapes. He has opened for the likes of Scott Hellman and Joey Landreth, and he continues to perform across Canada, the US, and Europe. Josh's music has seen huge success in the world of film and television. His songs have been used in some of the biggest shows on Netflix, such as Love is Blind, Perfect Match, Indian Matchmaking, The Glory, and Too Hot to Handle, to name a few. He was also involved in the writing and singing on a major release by Sony India that has already amassed over 11 million views on YouTube. Josh's latest album, To Be Loved Volume 1, has been featured on YouTube megastar Logan Paul's engagement video and has also most recently been nominated for a Juno Award for Adult Contemporary Album of the Year. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Josh Sahanta. Where do we find you in the world, and how are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. I'm currently in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, all the way in the cold of Canada on a thankfully warm day.
Okay, let's rewind. At what age did you think, cool, you want to be in the music or entertainment world, creative world, and how did that journey progress to where we are currently?
I was quite young when I decided to try doing music and writing songs, and I was in high school when I began writing music, and I began trying to sing for the first time. And, you know, I never really felt encouraged to pursue music as a career. I come from a culture where that's not really something that people do for a job. And, you know, the expectation that I had put on me from a young age was to go to university and become a lawyer or a doctor or, you know, something of that nature. But so I kind of never thought that I would be doing music. And I got a degree in psychology. I went to university for 5 years. I worked in the psychology field for 2 years. And it was only until about 2020, actually, that I had the opportunity to go full time with music. And I've been doing that ever since 2020, and writing a lot of music for Netflix shows and things like this. So it's been a long time coming, for sure.
When the transition was made from psychology to doing music full time, was there resistance from the family?
Definitely. You know, that was probably one of the hardest conversations I've ever had to have with my family. You know, they didn't really understand that music even could be a career or something that you could get paid to do. And so they come from a completely different worldview than me, and they've never seen, I'm the only musician in my entire family history. And so they've just never seen it done before. Mm-hmm. They were just wanting the best for me, and they were wanting me to be able to have a stable career. Yeah. And so it was coming from a place of just caring about my future. But especially after doing that 5 years of university, I kind of was hoping that they'd at least trust that, you know, I did schooling, I did that, and I still think, even after that, that I could do this. And so it was very tough, but they agreed to let me have 1 year to try to pursue music and kind of see what happened. And thankfully that year, there was a lot of really amazing things that happened in my career. And they said, you know what, this actually maybe could be a possibility. And fast forward now to 2024, they're fully supportive of it. And yes, we've accomplished parental approval.
From 3 to 4 minutes in creating a song, is it easy every time? What motivates it? What invigorates it? Let's unpack your creative brain.
Yeah, my creative process changes, honestly, a lot. I find that if I do the same thing too many times, it leads to really terrible songwriting. So sometimes I most often write on the guitar. It's my most comfortable instrument. I gravitate to it the most often. But if I've been writing too many songs on the guitar, I'll kind of get into a bit of a mental block, and then I'll have to switch up the instrument, and I'll grab a piano, or I'll find some cool software synth that I've never used before. Just kind of anything to keep the creativity flowing. And I love writing songs with other artists. I collaborate quite often, I co-write quite often, and I find that just having a fresh perspective from a different songwriter who has a different skill set than I do often leads to great results. So I kind of just have to switch things up very often so that I don't get stagnant and write the same song 100 times by accident.
You referenced that you use different softwares, different tools to allow you to be more creative and to use things that you've never used before. Is it a process of like, yes, I'm discovering something new that I've never used before? Or is it like, oh, this is something new, I need to now figure this out?
That's a great question. It kind of depends what it is. There definitely is moments of like, what is this? How does this work? And how do I make music from this? But I do think that I have fun doing that, unless it's completely frustrating and it's a specific tool that I'm like, yeah, this isn't really fun for me anymore. Then I just will not use that again. But most often, especially when it comes to software instruments, like they come with so many preset sounds on them that you literally can just like flick through until you find one that you like, and then that instantly gives you inspiration. And that's kind of what I tend to do when I use software instruments, is I'll just flick through different presets until I find one that I'm like, oh wow, okay, that song has just written itself now because that sound did all the heavy lifting for me. That's kind of what I often do. I'm not very much somebody who likes to tweak knobs and like make a sound the way that I like. I do very much like go through every single sound that a software has until I find one that inspires me right away.
And then obviously you put your own elements, your own sounds, your own instrumentation over and above that sound. So it's not only just that sound on its own. Am I correct?
Absolutely, yeah. So when I found my, like, I call it my bed track. It's the one that I build the song up from. I will lay that down, have that dialed in, and then from there I will then think about what else it needs: guitars, pianos, strings, m hundreds and hundreds of vocal stacks. Like I will kind of just throw every idea at the wall and see what sticks and kind of build the song up from there. And that is almost how I write a song every single time, is just experimentation, adding things in, deciding it doesn't work, taking it out, trying something new, and just kind of adding and removing until it sounds like a song.
You referenced that you enjoy writing and collaborating with others. So, in this space, naturally, there'll be artists that you've collaborated with a number of times, but then there'll also be artists that you are collaborating with for the first time. So, when it is a new artist that you've never worked with or collaborated with, does it take you a moment to get used to their energy, to get used to them as a person, or do you just dive in and allow the vulnerability to flow?
I mean, I've written with loads of different artists in different genres, and I actually find that it often leads to really amazing results just because they think about songwriting in a completely different way than I do. And to be coming from two different sounds, can often create something that I never would have created had I been writing with somebody that's more similar to me. But I think, yeah, the process for me is typically the same. Like we try to go into what I kind of just call a counseling session before every songwriting. It's for every session, I should say, that like, hey, let's just, no bars held, like let's just tell each other what we're going through, even though we just met maybe for the first time. Like, tell me your deepest, darkest secret kind of thing. Because and I find that like once you share something with somebody, they're more likely to share something with you. And I find just that like time and time again, my best and most successful songwriting sessions happen when two artists are willing to be vulnerable with each other. But if you're just going into a session thinking, yeah, I'm not really going to share, I don't know who you are, I don't trust you, I just want to write a generic breakup song, You're not going to have access to the same vocabulary as you could if you were willing to share a specific scenario that you might have been through. I think every single time, like my go-to is just like, let's just leave it all in the air and like tell each other exactly what it is that we're going through, and then we'll write an absolutely smash hit. And yeah, it's like a counseling session that pays you if you do it right.
Oh, I like that. I've never heard it referenced or described as that before, but that's super cool. It makes total sense. You reference different genres of music that you write in. Are there any specific ones that come easier to you and you gravitate towards, and others that are more challenging? Or are they all easy?
Yeah, I would say lately I gravitate more towards the like singer-songwriter folk kind of sound. I've done a lot of like R&B, and like my earlier music used to be very R&B heavy. But I find that like the difficulty that I've had with R&B lately is that it often pushes you in a content direction that maybe you might not want to be in. And I find that, and what I mean by that is like, I'll put it this way. I'm married and just had a baby who is now coming up on 4 months old.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. And I find that like R&B songs tend, just the way that chord structures are and the way they sound, they always sound like very seductive. It's like R&B songs tend to very like gravitate towards like promiscuity and like things that I just don't relate to anymore, I guess. Like I've yet to hear an R&B song that sounds like that is about like being in a committed relationship with your wife as a now dad. Like it feels weird to write R&B music now in a way. And so I've been gravitating a lot more to the like acoustic singer-songwriter folky kind of thing, because the songs that I've been writing lately are like very much inspired by my wife and my daughter, and that genre just seems to fit those kinds of feelings a lot better. So that being said, like that's kind of where I'm sitting at now with my music. And not to say that I'll never write R&B again. I just might need to reinvent how I write R&B and figure out, okay, not every R&B song needs to be about love. Like it could be about something completely different. And yeah, so that's kind of just where I'm at with genre and my relationship with it. It's just like it changes depending on kind of the season of life that I'm in.
Absolutely. And like you said, you can reinvigorate, you can recreate R&B in a different way and let the world be inspired by yours.
Absolutely, yes.
So I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. I love the aesthetic of holding something. The journey of the choice, the journey of the unpacking, the booklet, the listening from song 1 to 10 or 15. I'm not sure if you're aware that CDs, even cassettes and vinyls are making a massive comeback. Vinyls alone last year in the UK, 5.9 million copies sold, the biggest since 1990. And cassettes and CDs are also on an upward trajectory. But we've also got these streaming platforms whereby people consume music on. What is your observation and perception of the landscape at the moment?
I fully agree with what you just said, actually. I have had so much success selling vinyl records at when I play concerts. I find that even people who don't have a record player will often buy a vinyl record simply because of the collectability and the art factor of it. It's a large piece of art with my artwork on it and the track listing on the back and personal messages, and you can put like goodies inside the sleeve, and just the feeling of a record and everything about it is just so collectible. And I feel like we are in such a collectible culture right now. Like if even if you look at the, this is completely off topic, but like trading cards are making a comeback. Like lots of people are now collecting Pokemon cards again, and like hockey cards and football cards, and people just like collecting things now all of a sudden. And I feel like when I was a kid, collectibles was huge. I have books upon books of like Pokemon cards that I bought as a kid, and then it kind of went away for a while and it wasn't cool anymore, and then now all of a sudden it's cool again. So I think vinyl records actually does fit into that same category where it's like a very cool thing to collect now all of a sudden. And so I sell vinyl records like off the shelves. Like every time I play a show, it's my number one item that sells. And CDs as well, not as much I find as vinyl records, but like definitely like people are interested in them again. So I find that like when you go to a show and when you listen to an artist live, it's almost impossible not to leave with something. You can take pictures to show that you were there, but there's something still special, especially if the artist is there signing CDs and records for you, which I always do personally at my shows. And so if you can spend, they're not overly expensive either. If you spend a few dollars here and there and go to a show, buy a vinyl record and have that artist sign it for you, that to me means a lot more than all the photos and videos that you took on your phone at that concert, because it's something that you, every time you look at it and you see it in your room, you're reminded of the experience that you had at that concert, especially if it was a very great, memorable concert. So I find that like it makes sense to me why these things have made a comeback. I think streaming will always be king in a way. Like I don't see vinyl records ever overtaking streaming now, just because of how much streaming has dominated the music industry. But that being said, I do see there being almost a rebellion against streaming at some point where people actively choose to support vinyl records and CDs again. Just because even if you look at like, I seem to get an email every month that Spotify is increasing their monthly prices. It's like, again, like I feel like they just did it. And it's like every month it seems like they send me an email where they're raising their prices another 10 cents or another dollar. I have a Spotify account that I pay for monthly, and they just keep raising the prices on it. So like if they, I almost feel like if they continue to do that to the point where, you're paying an unreasonable amount, especially in today's economy, just to listen to music, I could see people rebelling against that and saying, you know what? I'm gonna just not pay for this membership anymore, and I'm gonna go back to buying records and listening to songs actually, like intently, with intention. And that's unfortunately, like when you asked about landscape, that's something I feel like we've lost a little bit with the rise of streaming, is that people don't listen to music with the same amount of intention anymore as they did when you physically put a record and you drop the needle on it and you hear the crinkles and then you have to flip it after five songs. There's something so much more like meditative about that, and something so much more like tactile and meaningful that I feel like an activity that people can do now is, oh, let's just sit and listen to this record and have a glass of wine or something like that. Whereas when you're listening on streaming and it's just a click of a button, I find this is just me. I could be completely off base here with.
It becomes disposable, like, oh, boring change, boring change. Whereas if the CD's playing or the record's playing, it's like, okay, I've taken the time to purchase this. Let's give it the energy, the intention, and the ears that it deserves.
Definitely. And I think to add on to that, say you buy a record and there's a song or two songs on there that you're not overly a fan of. If you're listening to it on a record player, you can't, it's not super easy to just skip that song. You have to kind of listen to it. And what I've found actually by listening to records is that like I actually come to like some of the songs that I originally didn't like, because it forces me to think. Say for example, my favorite artist is John Mayer, or at least one of them, and like Continuum is one of, in my opinion, one of the best albums of all time. And there's like a couple songs on there that I'm not so much of a fan of, but after listening to this album on vinyl record a few times, I've come to actually appreciate those songs, because I'm like, the same John Mayer who wrote the songs that I love wrote those songs that I'm not as much of a fan of too. Like, I would like to understand what about that song he felt was good enough to make it onto this record. And it's given me a different appreciation of those songs to the point where now I don't feel the need to skip them every time they come on. Whereas if I was listening on Spotify, I'd probably skip it every single time and not even give it a chance. It expands your musical horizons, let's say, a bit more than you would just having the ability to press a button and skip.
I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question in 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 8 years, I know your answer will be different every time because there are millions of them. I recognize that and I understand that. I'm not saying favorite, I'm saying top of mind. But if you had to push play to five songs by other artists once we finish this conversation, what would those five songs be and by whom?
Okay, I would play Lost in Paris by Tom Misch. I would play Belief by John Mayer. I would play Lego House by Ed Sheeran. I would play Sparks by Coldplay. And I would play Tato by Masego.
So you mentioned earlier that you write lots of songs for Netflix or movies or television. So when it comes to that situation, how does it work? Do you go into a writing session knowing, okay, this is going to be for a specific show? Or is it, I'm going to write a song now, and then that lands up on a television program?
That's a great question. And in fact, that's exactly what I'm going to do after this call. So that's very timely. So this is actually a very practical way. So on, I've got my to-do list right here.
Yes.
And after this call, I'm going to be writing a song for Love is Blind, which is one of the shows that I've written music for on Netflix. The way that I'll approach this now is I will just write a song knowing that it needs to be about something that would be relevant to that show. So with it being a reality TV show about dating and love and things like that, I know that I have to write a love song essentially. So after this call, my goal is to write a love song. And basically the way that I do it is like, I'm just going to write the song and keep it within the parameters of that, of what I just mentioned. And if once it's finished, it checks the boxes for me of like, this is perfect. This is exactly what they're looking for. Then amazing. Then I've accomplished that goal and I've got my song that I'm going to submit to them. However, if I've finished that song and it doesn't fit that those parameters, but it's still a good love song, I can actually repurpose that for something else. Now, whether that's my artist project that I release my own music under, or that's another side project, or that's another situation that I'm writing music for film and TV for, I will just save that song until the right opportunity comes for it. And then that way I've got it in a folder. And in my opinion, like I used to have this mentality that's quite flawed where like if I write a song and it's not a good fit for anything, it was a complete waste of time writing that song. And I've had to since change that mentality because that's not true. I think every single song deserves to be written, and at some point I've been able to find a use for every song I've ever written. Not, I mean, within reason, not every song I wrote when I was 10 years old, but like the songs that I've written in the last 3 years, like I've found somewhere for them eventually. And some of them have sat for 3 years, some of them sat for a week before I found something for it. But the point is that there's never a bad There's never a reason to not build my catalog. And I've got, a private website where I have all my music that I've ever written on. And anytime an opportunity comes, I can send these songs to different A&Rs and whatever. And it's just always beneficial to have access to them. So even if I write a song after this call that doesn't fit for Love is Blind and it doesn't fit for my artist project, I'm still gonna save that and hope that one day I'll find something that like, oh yes, I wrote that song. This is a perfect opportunity to use it now. But what my hope is that I will be able to use this for Love is Blind because I'm running out of time and I need to send them music very soon.
Okay.
Well, the inspiration of a song comes for a reason. So the point is that it's a learning experience to write that and experience that, whatever shape or form that it comes through, and however it's used. So it's always good to know that it's not always only about the time. It's about upskilling and also crafting my skill and focusing on that skill. Just to add what you said, it's never a waste of time. It's about enhancement.
Exactly. Yep.
What is next? What's happening short term and long term?
I'm actually currently in the process of moving to Nashville. You know, I've been working with my manager, Tom, who connected us for about a year now. And, you know, he's never even been to Canada until he came with me to the Juno Awards, where I was nominated this year. And that was his first time ever in Canada. So, you know, we've been working together remotely, me in Canada, him in Nashville, for about a year. And, you know, we've had constantly issues where the distance has been difficult. It's like, it's kind of the way I think about it is it's like having a long distance relationship. It's like you can make it work if you have to, but it's not going to be as effective as if you were in the same place. And that's kind of exactly what we're going through right now, is like he's having all these opportunities for me, but they require me to be in Nashville tomorrow or next week. And it's like, it's impossible for me oftentimes to drop everything and go to Nashville that quickly. My wife and I have been thinking about this a lot, and we kind of think, you know what, maybe it might be beneficial to just go for a year and spend a year in Nashville and just work extremely hard and build as many connections as I possibly can, and kind of reevaluate where we're at after that year and see, do we need to stay for longer or do you think we can go home now? And so that's kind of what my plan is now, is, you know, maybe to go spend a year there, work with Tom and figure out what we can do in that year. And then once that year's up, I'm hoping that I'll be in a place where we can either come back to Canada and have more work remotely, or we may have to stay for a bit longer in Nashville to continue to build upon those connections. So that is the most immediate thing that's happening right now, because we're aiming to be there for spring of next year. So we're going through the visa process now and kind of making that a possibility.
So the podcast is listened to throughout the world. So as a final message, what would you like to say?
Oh boy, what would I like to say? I would like to say, just to be a nice person. I've found that, especially in the last few years, you know, political differences and just how much division there's been in society, I think it's more important than ever just to have patience for your fellow person, and just even if you don't agree with somebody, just to try to see life from their shoes and what experiences they came from. And I think it's just more important now than ever just to try to live at peace with each other. I think we're in a very dark time in history right now, and I think just something as simple as that can make a world of a difference, to be honest. So that's what I would say.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.